From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Now, there's been a lot of stuff happening lately about space.
Do tell, Mark, do tell.
It's been a great week or two in space stuff. Now, recently, we've seen a photo of Jupiter's bottom. We've also seen photos of Saturn's ring, so surely, Trent...
Surely there's a joke about Uranus coming up.
It's not long before we see a photo close up of Uranus.
Wow.
But Mars is also hotting up in the news, and you may have heard the Hawaii-based High Seas mission, which was the fourth such mission, where they're basically pretending that they're on Mars by being up high altitude in a place in Hawaii where no trees grow. And they had to wear their spacesuits. So they're trying to see whether men and women could stand on the isolation and survive 12 months away from everyone. They just came out recently. They finished their 12 months. And of course, they had a lot of time in their hands. So what was one of the things they did while they were there? Play board games.
No.
Absolutely, to help pass the time.
On
now,
fake Mars.
I saw photos of some of these games. Apples to Apples, Axis and Allies, Monopoly, the Night Sky Edition.
What?
Like, where was the Mission Red Planet? Mm. Where was the Terraforming Mars? Like, wouldn't that make more sense? Because then they could actually play games and study at the same time.
I thought the whole purpose of this experiment was to see if people could survive on a place like Mars without killing each other. And they put Monopoly into that equation?
I know. No co-op games even.
This is a game about a show about board games and card games called The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Trent.
I'm Mark.
I'm Leon.
And, well, it's half of Leon here tonight. I think we'll get into that in a moment. And what else are we getting into tonight?
So we're going to talk about a game, a classic really, that we've played recently, Agricola. We're going to talk about the games you can fit in your pocket, Leon.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the worst board game covers and why board game covers are even so bad. Hey, you know what else I wanted to know, though?
What?
I wanted to know, in the High Seas mission, how many times do you reckon someone said, we're going to have to science the shit out of this thing?
You know what? I've been to that place in Hawaii where they do that. Yeah.
Really?
It's cool. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you about it. Ween, light me up, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent, Leon and Mark here tonight, and we advise listening to this show while you're wearing some kind of protection, because Leon has brought the plague.
I indeed do have the plague.
Into the studio, into the radio show, into the podcast. How nice of you to share.
It's real life pandemic.
Yeah, and it's self-inflicted, so I've got no one to blame on myself.
Let's have a good listen to you. What are the symptoms?
I'm very lightheaded. I'm going back and forth between hot and cold just constantly.
Wow.
And I've got a horrible sore throat. Luckily, when I get sick, I don't cough, which is nice.
For us.
Yeah.
And for everybody.
And like I said, I'm pretty sure it's self-inflicted. It's just exhaustion and booze, which I'll talk about later.
Has any of that been on playing board games at all? Have you played anything lately?
Other than when the booze was involved, no.
All right.
No, well, I've been doing that working thing, hence the exhaustion.
Well, let's talk about something that somebody else has played lately. Mark?
Sure. Well, just prior to this episode, which is episode 133, a few of us got together and played Agricola by Uwe Rosenberg.
And I think it's fair to say that we weren't excited.
I wasn't even there, and I wasn't excited.
You may not have been, Trent. I was excited to get this back to the table because I hadn't played this in a non-electronic format, in an analog format quite some time.
With humans.
Because Garth and I have been playing it a little bit, one game at least, on a board game... No, not Board Game Arena, the other one, whatdejou.net, I think it is.
Bless you.
And that made us think, hey, we should get this to the table because you, in particular, Trent, had never played it before. And luckily, friend of the show, Carl, had a copy.
Leon Agricola, have you played it?
I know what it is.
It's like having to eat your vegetables, isn't it? If you're in the board gaming hobby.
Look, let me talk about this. And the first thing of note is it came out 2007, 9 years ago. That seems like an eternity in the board game world, 9 years ago, and it came out to much adoration. In fact, in 2008 and 2009, it won over 9 major awards, including a special Spiel des Jahres award that they made up just for this game. It was given the Complex Game Award when no such game had existed. No such award had existed. There was a game awarded that way 2 years earlier as a one-off, and that was the first time that had happened. This was the second time 2 years later, and I think this sort of eventually led to there being another category, the Kennerspiel.
Mm-hmm.
But this was recognised when there was no such award. That's how much impact it made. And now, since the original game came out, there's been lots of variations. There was the Farmers in the Moor expansion. There was a two-player version called All Creatures Great and Small that came out in 2012. And then, of course, Caverna, which is the latest iteration, came out in 2013. Now, at this stage, Caverna is ranked number 5 on Board Game Geek. Agricola is ranked number 7 on Board Game Geek. Uwe Rosenberg did both of those games, as well as Le Havre, which is 23 on Board Game Geek. He'd also done Patchwork, which is ranked 38, Fields of Arles, which is ranked 52, and Aura and Labora, which is ranked 62. This guy is not only prodigious, but people like what he does.
And I think it's fair to say that Agricola is a major milestone in the hobby. It's influenced countless other games. But frankly, I also feel that it's been to the hobby's detriment, because this is a game about farming.
It is.
And that theme
would
never have caught on and been anywhere near as popular if it wasn't for this bloody game. And Caverna is about farming in a cave.
Farming in a cave, where
which
all
makes
the best
no
people
sense.
Farm.
Like, what the...
There's mushrooms, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yes.
In a cave. I'm not asleep. I promise I'm not asleep.
Yeah. So, look, this is a game of not just farming, but subsistence farming. It's not like farming for fun and profit. It's like farming to feed your family all from year to year and barely survive. That's what it's about.
I am sick of all those games about farming for fun. I mean, it's... People complain about zombies, but there's twice as many of those.
So it is a worker placement game with the choices available growing by one each time you play a round. So there's 14 rounds split into 6 phases. At the end of each... And no, I know 6 doesn't go into 14, but I'll tell you about that later.
Oh, my God.
So at the end of
each
confused. Set of phases, starts off being 4, then it goes down to 2, then 1... This is when you have the harvest time, and part of that is feeding your family. So at the start of the game, every 4 rounds, you have to feed your family, and it gets faster and faster. And it is one of those things where you feel like in this game you barely ever get your engine going, because every effort goes into just keeping your family alive.
Your family being your workers, and it's probably fair to say you start off with 2, you probably need a 3rd.
Oh, well, absolutely.
And they keep eating.
Yeah, that's right, bloody children. One of the actions is family growth, where you can, from 2 workers, make a 3rd. Who would have thought?
But in the mechanic of the game, you've got to have a separate room.
That's
in your,
right.
In your farmhouse.
You've got to build a bigger house before you can have kids.
That.
Absolutely.
Haven't these people heard of just improvising? Locking the door?
Speaking of farming for fun and profit, one fun fact I wanted to share with you guys. Melissa Rogerson did some of the card translations from the original German to English.
Melissa Rogerson, friend of the show.
Friend of the show,
Board
Melissa
Game Australia
Rogerson.
And PAX 2000 and everything.
That's her.
Wow.
She did some of the English translations on the cards from German to English.
On your mill.
That's right. So there's a link back to us. So in this game, as I said, you've got to build your house.
Are we taking credit for that?
You've got to grow your family.
Okay,
cool.
You've
got to raise food. You've got to grow crops and animals. You've got to get occupations. You've got to get minor and major achievements, which are things that help you a bit or a lot. You've got to do all these things while at the same time, as we said, feeding your family. And the fun thing, let's just have that be the word of the night. The fun thing is how each round, you start off with about 8 actions. Each new round, a new card comes out, which gives an extra action.
Mm.
And so you've got one extra action coming out each round in a deck of cards. Now, whilst they come out, you'll know what phase they're going to come out. You know, you don't know what part of the phase. So, for example, family growth, having another person, that's going to come out in phase two. But there's four rounds in phase two, and it could come out in the first round of phase two or the last round of phase two.
Where does the fun and profit come into it, Mark? Remind me.
It's an engine-building game, and everyone loves building engines. There's a huge pool of possibilities about what you can do in this game because of the occupations. I think there's a deck of 140 or 160 different ones of those. There's another deck of 140 or 160, between the two of them they add up to 300, but I don't know which is which, of the minor achievements. So depending on the hand of occupations and achievements you get each round, the game could play quite differently. You've also got to not only make your house bigger, but make it better. I mean, isn't that real life just there? Doesn't everyone want to change their wooden house to a clay house and then to a stone house?
I was saying that to my wife just the other night. Mm. Yep.
And then you introduce all the different card decks. So initially we played with the E deck, E for easy. But then, of course, if you want to get more complicated, everyone know that complicated starts with K, so you introduce the K deck. Then you have the I deck.
What?
It's complex in German, trust me. Then you have the I deck, which makes the game more interactive. You even have the G deck, which is for gamers. And believe it or not, you have the X deck. What do you think the X deck adds?
Can you ask that question again very carefully, please? Because I'm not quite sure I heard you.
What do you think the X deck adds to the game?
Given that I've only played this once, I don't know, Mark. It is, what, aliens?
Aliens.
Right.
Believe it or not, the X deck adds aliens.
Alien farmers?
I do not know.
How is this not on the box? I would have played it by now.
No, but these are extra decks you've got to buy. So it comes with the easy deck, the complex deck, and the interactive deck.
And there's an expansion that adds aliens into this game.
Yep.
I've never heard of that.
To pick up the crazy farmers who are talking about the crop circles.
Who knows? But look.
It picked me up and it got the anal probe and no one believes me because I ain't got no photo.
But this game is a classic for a reason, because it really took that worker placement mechanic when, remember, back in 2007, there wasn't a lot happening in the worker placement area. Kalix had come out, I think, in 2005 or 2006. And Kalix is really complicated and really boring. This was a game that made worker placement fun again.
Yay! Look, when I played it, it felt very clunky. It felt very idiosyncratic and dated. But by the end, I was enjoying myself.
Yeah.
All right. I do actually see the appeal. It's not a game that is very forgiving to beginners.
Correct.
Because you really do need to know the contents of those decks.
Yeah. And how and what actions you're going to be able to take.
Right.
When.
And what strategy to choose early on, and to know the cards that are coming up so you can actually deliver on that strategy.
Yeah. And then there's the whole scoring where, if you haven't got at least a bit of everything, you actually get negative points. So if you don't have at least, you've got sheep, boars, and cows as animals. If you don't have at least one of all three of them, you get negative points. If you don't have vegetables or if you don't have corn, you get negative points. If you haven't got, your house is worth nothing unless it's at least clay. So you really got to do a bit of everything, but there's just not time.
No. You are constantly racing against the clock.
And I really have this feeling of, like I said, it's an engine-building game, but for me, I'm just shifting into third, if I'm lucky, in the last round of the game, and I'm thinking, I finally got this. No, I didn't get it worked out in time. You know, like, that's what it feels like. And I guess, because I haven't played it that many times, the more you play it, the more you will maybe get your engine off to a start earlier.
Leon, it's probably fair to say that you and I enjoy Euros a little bit less than what normally Mark would.
Teeny bit.
But we do play them and we enjoy the newer ones. This one is obviously hugely influential. Mm. Is Mark's description calling you to try your hand at subsistence farming for fun and profit?
Well, to play the young guy card, I'd play the game if the aliens were in it. But Although
we should have a segment which is just like Leon's reviews. What was it, Robinson Crusoe? You said
it's all right, bit long.
Yep,
three stars, some funny bits.
Yep, and Agricola, I'd play it if the aliens are in it.
Yeah, basically. Now,
Gears of Chip.
Yeah, there's always that. Now, I know it's not similar game-wise, but it is similar theme-wise. Would you play this over, say, Scoville, which is also a similar theme, and that's a game that I actually am interested in?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, they're so different. Scoville being a game about chili farming.
Yeah, it's still farming, though.
Yeah, but I think they're so different because Scoville doesn't have the worker placement. So you get to do everything each round.
Yeah.
The order of it might change, whereas one of the challenges of this is I really want to do that family growth, or I only really want to get that 3 stone, but Trent, the person, goes there first, I can't take it. So then you've got to think about, well, how am I going to grow my house bigger? How am I going to feed my family? What other way can I do it? You've just got to start thinking out of the box. It's one of the things I really like this, is that action selection, the worker placement really can be cutthroat, because sometimes there's only one way to do something.
So Caverna updates Agricola, right?
Yeah, look, I have to declare, I haven't played Caverna. I see it being played, and to see it looks very similar to Agricola. I believe it has a lot of similar mechanics. And what I've read is that rather than, like in Agricola, where you've got to do a bit of everything to avoid negative points, Caverna does allow you to specialise and be the mushroom master or the sheep captain or something like that. And this game was so popular when it came out.
I want to be the sheep captain.
Caverna.
He looked right at you and he looked at me for Mushroom Master.
Is it the sheep captain or Captain Sheep?
Captain my sheep captain. Look, the fact that Caverna's been out for a lot less and gone past Agricola on the hotness.
But that did happen in like the first 2 weeks it came out. But it still retained it, which is
something. I was just really surprised that something that didn't change it that much could make it so much more popular. I would like to try it one day, but I would like to get a few more games of Agricola in first.
Look, I think, yes, I'd have to go back and try Agricola again and perhaps concentrate on it a little bit harder. But it really is like eating a bowl full of Brussels sprouts.
You can't grow Brussels sprouts in it, though.
True. All right, so speaking of thinking outside the box, well, what if that box is really small and fits in your pocket and you're mobile?
Segway!
And I know, look at that. And you're mobile with just a small bit of space in said pocket to fit a game. What game to fit?
What would you do?
Leon's been thinking about this.
Yes, I have.
Okay, let's talk about that next. It's the Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Going swimming, I think I've been had, lads. And that is a song played on the radio station Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Dice Man Cometh, being nerdy, as usual, Thursday night.
Of course,
yep.
That's what we do.
But what if you need to be nerdy on the go? Well, a man who's been non-stop, run himself into the absolute ground, non-stop partying, the rock and roll, nerd gamer lifestyle, embodied that is Leon. Dice Man Leon.
Thank you very much, Trent. So what I'm going to talk about is not going to be introductory games, so your Ticket to Ride, your Carcassonne, which you take around to a place where you know people are there and you might get some games in. I'm also not talking about party games, your Telestration, your Cash and Guns, where there's a bigger gathering and you think it could possibly happen.
Hang on, Leon. You can't fit Ticket to Ride in your pocket.
That's exactly why I'm not talking about it, Mark.
Okay, good.
Good to see you're listening.
Except if it's on your phone, of course.
Oh.
But we're not talking about phone games here, are we?
No, we're not. We're talking about games the size of phones, but we're also not necessarily talking about micro games, which is the big thing these days, because micro games are still for gamers, essentially.
Hang on, micro games are the big thing?
Oh, he's not helping, is he?
He's not.
Anyway, so I've broken this up into a few different categories. So the first one is two games that are pocket-sized or handbag-sized, if you've got a pretty wife that will happily do that for you.
Thank you for being so inclusive of the fairer sex.
Not a trouble.
And husbands who may carry handbags.
Yes, let's not discriminate.
Yes, no, everybody welcome.
It's quite okay for a man to carry a handbag. You do know that.
Yes, it is. It's the time.
Yes.
Why am I on trial all of a sudden?
Is it because I've been on a jury today?
That is possibly that.
Objection!
Not, yeah. overruled and stuff.
Yeah, more about Mark's jury duty in a moment or two, but please continue.
Anyway, as I was saying, so there's two games that myself and my wife always take with us because we can play them with any group of people. They don't have to be nerds. They don't have to be gamers. They don't have to be anybody. These are two games that you can put in the table in front of you and literally just start setting the game up. And people will just be like, interesting. And then you can explain it in a few seconds, and then away you go. So now the first game, I have to be a bit delicate about this, because the rest of the words in the title are called the card game, but the first word is, it starts with F and it's got four letters.
Right.
And it is an obscenity, some might say.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm not going to say it, even though we're all well aware that there's no such thing as bad words, just bad intentions.
Somebody let some crows.
Yes, so it's that word, the card game. And this is a game that I did play when I was at the pub on Saturday, which will explain the way that I feel right now. And what I did is I just started putting it out in front of four people that were all sitting there having a pint. And the whole point of this game is that there's three different types of cards in this one little deck. And on the cards, there's different colours and different words. If it's a swear word, you say the swear word. If it's a black word, you say the colour in the background of the card. If it's a coloured word, you say the colour of the word. And that's it. And people start throwing down cards, and as soon as you can possibly say it, you say the correct answer. If it is correct, you move on. If it's not, like a snap type thing, you take the cards back. First person to get rid of their hand is it.
So it's just someone handing out cards?
Basically, you take the deck, and whoever's man he's playing, which could be, you know, eight or so, just hand out the deck to everybody. And right. Then everyone just starts flipping them
so
over
one. So it doesn't need somebody to run it?
No.
Yeah, cool.
It does not need somebody to run it. I literally put this in front of like five people the other night, didn't say a word. I put all the cards in front of them, turned over three of them as examples and said, this is what we're doing.
Well, with a pint or two, I could see where that could start to get quite difficult.
Exactly. And this is a game, like I said, you can play this with absolutely anybody. Obviously, at a pub type situation would be preferable. And then the second game I'm going to mention is a game that we've talked a lot about of late because it's a very old game, but we've... I know Mark's had his copy for a while, but I've only just discovered it this year, and that's No Thanks.
Oh,
which is
Gives a Chip.
Gives a Chip, which is our nickname for it. Which is, if it came out this year, I'd be throwing it in there, a Game of the Year type thing at the end of the year. But it didn't, so I won't, even though Garth did that last year with Cosmic Encounter.
But it is a perennial.
Yes, and it is just absolutely amazing. And we've talked about that before. It's just a game, it's a deck of cards and a pile of chips. And again, you can absolutely play this in front of anybody. The, another game that I have called Spit It Out, which we actually played on the show a few months ago. And this is a game where all it is a deck of card and one die. So you roll the die, and it could say five. What somebody's going to do is read you out six questions. You have to lie about all of them, except number five, you have to tell the truth.
But you have to tell the truth
in the realm of possibility. So if somebody says, what's a city in England? You could say Rome. You couldn't say salmon milkshake.
So when you say it's a deck of cards, it's questions on the cards?
It's questions on the cards, right. And they're double-sided, and that's it. And you need one die just to throw it down and go, that's the one you've got to tell the truth on. And then there's a timer, but everyone's got a phone with them, so 30 seconds, and away you go.
So where does the... I'm sorry, I'm not getting where the game element...
This one's more just a bit of a fun, really, to be honest with you.
Right.
This is a game you can play in 15 seconds, put it back in your pocket and go about.
Okay, so it's more about just actually making sure that you're... It's about actually making sure you're lying, I'm imagining.
Yeah. Well, all the questions are so easy. No one's going to go, I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
They're all ridiculously easy. And then the other one is a game called Geek Out, which I'm a big fan of, but no one will play it with me because I'm too good at it. And that is a game where there's cards... And a dice, again, that's got colours on it. You roll the dice, whatever colour comes up. You look at the corresponding card and say red, and that could be films, and there'll be a question about films.
Right.
And it'll say three films that star Will Smith. And then people will go around the table and bid on who thinks they could do higher. And we just keep going around and around until somebody finally goes, right, I'm going to, you know, everyone else has bowed out, and then they've got to name all those
films. This sounds good.
It's really, really
fun. I'll play this with you.
It's basically like Scattergories, but purely around geek topics.
And it is, again, you could have... This is a deck of cards and a single die.
I'll geek you out. I'll geek your ass out, buddy.
The reason nobody played this with me is because if comic books ever came out, that they wouldn't win, which is good because Trent would actually give me a run for my money.
And that's where I see the problem with this game with... People like you lot is you'll be like, well, I can name 32 different Batman titles. Well, I can name 47. Yeah. Well, I can name 55. And then we'd have to sit there while you recited 55 Batman titles.
But I think that's the point of that. I mean, it's called Geek Out.
Yeah. As long as this one here, you need people. It's called Geek Out. You need relatively nerdy friends, which I'm assuming everybody listening to this show probably has. Not to stereotype anybody, but it's just a random
guess. Nerd is mainstream these days.
Exactly.
Nerd's beautiful.
The next one on the list is Love Letter, but not Normal Love Letter.
No?
Because I would argue Normal Love Letter, if you put it down in front of non-gamers, in a social situation, it's not difficult, but people are still just kind of like, And when I say social situation, I could mean like with a bunch of teenagers and stuff around. Like, I have nieces that are teenagers. They would not play Love Letter with me. However...
Is that because it's got the word love in it and it comes in that little red velvet pouch with the little wooden hearts in it? Is that what you're saying?
It might not be appealing to some people. It might be a bit bland, is my point.
Is it? I thought you were saying it was a bit girly.
No, not at all. No, not in the slightest.
Because it's okay for men to play a girly game.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. I'm on trial again.
They'll put their handbag down for long enough.
Are you not in touch with your feminine side?
I am, just not at the moment.
I suppose you want to play Love Letter Batman.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yes, the idea of mass marketing these games to get more people. But at the end of the day, if some kid starts with Love Letter Batman and a year later is playing Forbidden Stars with his teenage mates, that's fine. I have no issue with that whatsoever.
Hey, Trent, here's one for you. Did you know that... There's obviously lots of versions of Love Letter. Coming this year, Lovecraft Letter.
Yeah, you saw that one coming, didn't you?
We just can't get enough Cthulhu.
Now, the other ones I'll go through a bit more quickly. Coup and Resistance. Again, you need people that are relatively gamery or nerdery, I'd say. They're not even words, I don't care. But they're because they're a bit more complicated to explain.
Which version of Resistance?
I like the original one. I'm a big proponent of if you've done it right, you don't have to change it. I don't think adding the extra stuff in the Avalon, I don't think it's necessary. I think pure Resistance of you're lying, no, you're telling the truth is fine. That's just my take on it anyway.
Yeah, I must admit I really like Coup these days. Mm. And again,
Coup's kind of replaced
it. There's a few variations of that, but I prefer the original. I just find it's another... A lot of these variations are just ways of making it more complex or adding more parts. And I think the base game, the beauty is there aren't many moving parts.
Yeah, it's my King of Tokyo, King of New York argument again. That the game was great. Did you want to make it more complicated? Yeah, it might be good, but at the end of the day, I'll just keep the simple, great game.
Yeah.
Right. Sushi Go is a game that everybody's played, and lots of people have it, which is grand. Sushi Go Party is out now, so that's the game that everybody should buy.
Right.
So, but I would argue that Sushi Go, even though it only comes in a small little tin, I think now that Party is out, which is a bigger tin, which is a bigger, better game, they could very easily put normal Sushi Go in like a card-shaped pack of cards.
Right.
And that, again, you could play that with like 12-year-olds. You could play that at the pub, even though probably not as well as the other games there, but you could. So that's pretty much all of those, but I've got two more special ones at the end, and these are two-player games.
I'd like to nominate one as well, please, but go on.
Yes, indeed, I'll get you boys in at the end. The two-player games, these are two games that myself and my wife have played, things like at a restaurant while waiting for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be sitting there looking at our phones all the time, which, you know, which does happen from time to time.
Or, God forbid, talking to each other.
No one wants to do that.
Yeah, we do a lot of that as it is. There's a car journey to the restaurant, it's a whole thing. So these two games have...
That's when you're trying to catch Pokemon.
Yeah. So these two games, one everyone will know, one not so much. And the one not so much is a game called Agent Hunter, which is a very simple little deduction game where each of us have 9 cards, and it's been a while since I've played it, so I'm a bit forgetful. You pick 3 that are your chosen spy cards, and the other person has to try and work them out. And it's just as simple as, like, is it that card or is it that card? And there's numbers on the cards as well. And it's a game that you can pick up for, like, a tenner. Like, I've seen this in retail shops for, like, $10.
What's it called?
Agent Hunter.
Okay.
It's, yes. Little nondescript box.
I thought he said something else. I thought it might have been a game that someone like Donald Trump might play.
Anywho. And then the final one, before I throw it to you lads, is a little game you may have heard of it called Magic the Gathering.
Hey!
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right.
It's a game, me and my lady friend, we first started playing this before we moved into the world of board games, and we still do play from time to time. But I would recommend... Because, let's face it, it's massive for a reason, because it's a good game. And they sell those jewel decks, which have 2 decks in it, ready to go, and 2 dice in it ready to go for life counters. And they're perfectly balanced to go up against each other.
Yeah.
And they're custom decks, so you don't have to change anything if you don't want to. You can literally play nothing else of Magic except buy 1 or 2 of these jewel decks and give 1 to one person, 1 to the other one, and away you go.
That's what everyone says, Leon.
Yes.
You don't need any extra cards, but then maybe just might like to change it up a bit, and before you know it, you've got 2 mortgages.
Well, I don't buy Magic anymore in the last few years, but I still do buy those jewel decks from time to time. just to, like I said, play with the wife. And it's a game that's a good time killer, especially once you both know the rules. Half an hour waiting for your food, easy done.
Not exactly the sort of thing you can drop down for casual play with just anybody.
No,
though.
But again, yeah. But, well...
Magic the Gathering is very easy to learn.
Depending
it's
on...
It's all in the cards.
Depending on the deck, I suppose. But yeah, it could be done. If somebody is a... You wouldn't probably put this down in front of your grandmother and go, this is how this is going to work. But somebody else, you know, that's either a gamer or just anybody in general, if they had the patience to learn it, I don't think it'd be that difficult to pick up.
And look, one more that I'd have to add in terms of games that can fit in your pocket but pack a lot of punch. Mark, you know this, The Great Dalmoody.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's obviously great for a big group, not so great for a small group, but yeah, definitely a big group.
I still think it works with a small, I mean, maybe four or five as a minimum. Yeah, look, and it works because people are afraid of rules and they're afraid of games that are too complicated.
Yeah.
And this is a game that's based on a traditional card game, and it's basic enough to teach in 30 seconds, and it's just a deck of numbered cards where you throw out progressively lower and larger sets of cards. So you might start with two tens. The next player has to match that with at least two more tens, or maybe three nines or four eights or whatever. And it just gets lower and bigger until eventually someone has to pick up all the cards.
Yeah.
And that person's usually going to end up being the greater peon. And whoever gets rid of their cards first is the Great Dalmoody.
Look, I love the Great Dalmoody. It's been a real hit for us at dinners, particularly at BorderCon. Good way of getting to know people. Probably a couple I'd add. Certainly, I have taken no thanks with me lots of times and introduced it to new people.
We just can't recommend that
enough. Yeah.
No, it's like, obviously, go to your local retailer, but I got mine on eBay for like $14.
Yeah. And I have used the original version of the of Love Letter.
Yep.
Although I do have the Kenzo special factory edition, which has got some really sweet looking Japanese art, and it's more apparently like the original Japanese game. But a couple of others, Star Realms is one of my go-to two-player games.
Yeah, this it's never set me on fire. It's got to be a
gamery type person.
Yeah.
And I had another one, and I've completely forgotten.
While you're thinking of that, I've actually got one more that we're not talking pocket size, but we're talking handbag size, because my wife and I took this on holiday with us recently.
Was this in your handbag or in hers?
It was in her handbag this time. Okay. And that was the DC deck building game, because I made a custom deck before we left. It's like 300 odd cards, so it's not fitting in your pocket. But if we were at an airport waiting for a flight that was delayed, so we put that down on the table in front of us, and it's a two-player game, but it took us a good hour or so, and we had heaps of people going, walking past us, all gruff and annoyed about missing their flight, going, what's that? What's going on?
So this
here?
That was the... Was that the two-player, the Batman versus the Joker variant? Or
no, it was just the normal
the full
one.
Game?
There was just the full game. But yes, I didn't even think about the Batman-Joker versus one. That's also perfect.
The final one I'll mention that I have used, Codenames. Codenames? Codenames, not our competition Codenames. Code Names, because two people or four people can play that.
I've played it, but I have trouble remembering the size of the box.
It's a big old box, but you could break it down, I think. Same as like a Splendor, you could break that down if it wasn't for the massive chips. They could bring out a travel version of Splendor with smaller chips or even cards for the chips, and that could be a deck of cards as well, which would be awesome.
These are all apps now, of course. This whole segment of the board gaming market is sort of moving online, I suppose. But look, there you go. There's a whole bunch of tiny little games. There is no excuse not to be playing something anywhere. So get yourself to your local friendly game shop and have a look at something small, because they do pack a lot of punch.
Absolutely.
And while you're there, you might like to scope the shelves to see if you can maybe judge a game by its cover. Because, my God, there are some bad covers out there.
Mm.
And we're going to be talking about that next. It's the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With a song that's very noisy.
Oh my goodness, that was the Dillinger Escape Plan with Hero of the Soviet Union. You're here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh.
Oh, that felt good.
Certainly woke me up.
Mark, Trent and Leon.
I had to play that because they've announced they're breaking up, and I'm just waiting for the last tour. And they're just amazing. Anyway.
I thought you were playing it to clear out Leon's head, because he looks like he's come alive.
Oh, I was doing that with the metal in the car on the way here. Don't worry.
Now, Trent.
Yes.
You often say to me, don't judge a game by its cover, Mark. Don't you?
He does. He says that every other sentence.
All the time, yeah.
I always judge things by their cover. I'm very superficial.
Everybody does, and if they say they don't, it's an evolutionary thing. We're liars.
I'm just honest about it. Yes. I'm totally judgmental. People say, don't be judgmental. I love being judgmental. It's what I live for. And we started talking about this last week because Garth was telling everybody about this game that he wants to play that's got a friggin' tractor on the cover.
Talking of farming, right?
Now,
more farming for fun.
No, I can't even remember the name of this bloody game. All I remember is the tractor on the
fields
cover.
Fields of Green?
No, I don't. Look,
as opposed to Fields of Arles?
I jumped on the Facebook. I thought, where can I find a bunch of uninformed art criticism for free? And I thought, Facebook. So thanks to all of our listeners who volunteered nominations for the worst board game cover ever. And I want to start this conversation by saying, first up, that I completely sympathize with artists, not only in this little industry, but in every sector of our economy, because artists are the great unsung heroes of pretty much any field of human endeavor that you want to talk about.
And you'd just never be able to know what people like. How many starving artists would have first seen Jackson Pollock and gone, he's made how much? What?
Right.
Okie doke, Ned.
The fact is we're surrounded by art on a daily basis, art and by graphic design, and they're two separate things, and you need to know that they are different. But they get artists get shafted, they don't get paid enough, it's too easy to steal their stuff online, so I do have a lot of sympathy for you. Art is undervalued, but...
Let's slag it off.
If you pay peanuts, you end up with crap on your box, don't you? And it seems like after years and years of design, a lot of game designers then just think of the box and the packaging as an afterthought. Would that be a fair assessment? Not in every case.
No, I don't imagine there's many board game designers who start off thinking, I'm going to have this amazing image and it's going to be on the cover. Because I guess often they keep their best art for, particularly in the case of games, with boards on the board itself. There's a couple that come to mind to me. Michael Menzel is the artist's name, and he's done a lot of boards for games, and he's actually even, he made a game himself, The Legends of Andor.
Right,
and he should have stuck to designing boards.
That was an award-winning game, Legends of Andor.
Yeah.
That won the Kennerspiel.
Yeah, well...
Yeah. We haven't played. At least
I played it once.
Anyway, look, let's start naming names. And our listener Adam Fowler submitted Stefan Feld's Castles of Burgundy from Ravensburger as possibly the worst board game cover ever. And if you take a look at it, by all means, pause us and jump on Board Game Geek to join us in this this conversation. It looks to have the Scarlet Pimpernel standing on a castle, staring at a castle. I mean, the name of the game does say there's more than one castle in the game, I suppose. Wagons are travelling into the middle distance as if people are off to do something quaint like die of dysentery or marry your sister. Doesn't exactly spell fun, does it?
No. It's generic is a word for it, maybe?
Controversial straight off the back. I don't hate that necessarily. I think the border is rubbish. But the actual art itself...
But hey, the board is coloured burgundy.
Let's just leave that.
Straight away, we're in Euro territory. And of course, there are endless examples of bearded men staring off into the middle distance or looking like they're queuing for the toilet. Kalis. Although Kalis has had a bit of a redesign.
Oh, yeah. I was jumping on Board Game Geek as soon as you mentioned it, bringing up the Kalis box and... I haven't seen this new Kalis box.
No, it does look a lot more attractive these days. Airlines Europe. That's a bloody awful cover, that one. El Grande, Concordia, Hansa Teutonica. They're all just uniformly shite.
And it's just so often that it's a gruff-looking sort of middle-aged gentleman, occasionally a lady, but mostly a gentleman, sort of staring into the middle distance, not doing anything.
And there's so much of it that it's got to be its own particular aesthetic, I think. And is it that the target market for these games want them to look dour and boring because it reinforces how serious they are? Is that it? Is it something about historical accuracy, maybe?
I don't know.
Well, when things first started kicking off about 10 years ago in board gaming, it was more about the games themselves and then the aesthetic thing, which has obviously changed a lot in the last decade.
Yeah, I guess that's right. They didn't
they weren't appearing on shelves where normal people
yeah, exactly.
would see them, so it didn't really matter, perhaps.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some Ameri trash, because there's plenty of examples there as well. And I'm going to name it straight up, Firefly. That is a crap cover.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's just the ship, isn't it?
It looks like exactly what it is. It's a bunch of second-rate publicity shots of the cast photoshopped together.
I hate when they use like stuff from TV shows and things in games, now, when they could hire an artist to do them.
You could have had a new piece of Firefly art with some grandeur to it.
Yeah.
That showed a better shot of the Serenity. Again, though, I wonder if the art really matters in this case, because you could stick the word Firefly on anything.
Firefly, again.
Right. And Joss Whedon tragics are going to queue up and pay for it, so maybe not. Robinson Crusoe, Adventure on the Cursed Isle. Not so much the new version. Again, this is another game, but the original one had a load of unnecessary cheesecake on the cover. A whole bunch of sort of piratey-looking, you know, marooned people standing on the front cover of the box, and the token female character with the strategically ripped top and pants.
Although I don't mind.
I really like that.
Oh, of course you don't.
I don't mind the wood and the chains and the sort of grittiness there, the shippy vibe that's happening
there. The art itself is fine, but look at the cheesecake.
What cheesecake? I want cheesecake now. What cheesecake are you talking about?
The woman on the cover.
It's... Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, no, now it dawns on
you. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's your handbag again? You should have brought it in. Defenders of the Realm. A few years ago, people were raving about this game, but I could not get past the box cover because it just looks like a second-rate Dragonlance novel.
And then when you take that on top of the fact that the game's like $150 or something like that.
Exactly.
It's just like, wow, this looks like something from the early 90s.
I'd also like to nominate Chaos in the Old World, Claustrophobia, and just about anything from the Warhammer universe.
Yeah, well, they all just have that Warhammer look, I guess.
It's you mean ludicrous. Humorless, and gauche.
Yeah. But I guess if you're trying to sell more to the same people that are using all the other stuff, then you use the same sort of look as everything.
I fully understand that inside every, lust-filled 15-year-old pimply kid who plays Warhammer, that there is a giant undead gridiron player. Space Marine, trying to get out. Yeah, I do understand that,
because you were one.
That's that, yes,
and still arguably are.
Yeah. Fantasy Flight's redesign of Tigris and Euphrates is worth a mention, because what they've done there is they've taken a very ugly game by Rainer Knizia and they've made it look beautiful, and yet somehow it's still ugly on the inside. Well, we played it.
Yes.
And talk about clunky and dated.
Yes. And they've done it again with Ra, I just noticed, another Rainer Knizia, although the art on that one looks quite good. But one I wanted to mention, Trent, people are raving about Innes.
I was going to say this.
Garth brought it up last week, I think, where it's the third, if you like, in that trio of Matago.
Yep.
The gameplay looks really, really interesting, but the colour palette on the cover I find really strange. I mean, the Celtic world is dark and mysterious. Like, it's, what, 50, 60 degrees north? It's dark, dim, the sun doesn't come out for long during the day.
There's never a blue sky like what's on that box.
And, yeah, they've got a bright blue sky. It's all these bright, sunny colours. Hello, we're the Celts, and we're not here to kill you at all.
And it doesn't,
just really strange.
And it doesn't fit with Cyclades or Comet as well, which is a bit weird considering it's kind of in that series.
And it does have the sort of the Celtic knotty writing type stuff, but the colour palette is really strange.
I do want to play this, but if it's terrible, I'm not going to tell you what my nickname for Innes is going to be.
Okay.
Well,
Uranus.
I could go back to the joke you made at the start of the show.
Okay.
Justin Hawkins nominated Race for the Galaxy for the worst box art.
Oh, Justin.
That's the one with the big space station, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's the sort of space station that was popular in illustrations for sci-fi novels 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. The Doc Smith or the E.E. Lensman or whatever
exactly.
Those ones.
It looks like a hotel. It looks like a space hotel.
I think that's a case of knowing your audience, because if you're a sci-fi nerd, many of them don't like to be too innovative. And if you don't believe me with that, check out the Hugo Awards and the Sad Puppies and what's happening there. Cards Against Humanity got a mention as well from our Facebook friends.
Because it has nothing on the cover.
Well, I feel like it's a kind of anti-art.
It does what it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. It's anti-establishment. It's anti-everything. So I would argue it's really good art.
But the problem with it is that that game's been so successful and the art is so stripped back and so simple that anybody thinks they can do it. And it's launched 1,000 imitators as well.
Yes, I was going to say, now you see a game... what am I trying to say? You can see the cover of a small box that's black with white writing in that particular font, and you immediately think that it's Cards Against Humanity, and you know, you've got these crabs against humidity and a whole bunch of different copycats.
Power Grid copped some hate from Ben Turner.
Oh, come on. There's a man and he's dialing a dial.
The new one's a bit more colourful, but it's still the same.
Is it power?
It's power.
It's a man twiddling a knob on a big green machine. It could be a Nazi gas chamber. It could be a gamma radiation experiment that creates the Hulk. We don't know. Just the guy's a scientist. He's holding a clipboard.
Well, those theories have brightened that up a bit, that's for sure.
But it's such a great game. Utterly uninspiring, humourless cover. Hasn't hurt the game any, though.
But I was going to say, the game board itself, and even though it's a decent game, the game board itself is not the most jovial, exciting thing in the world. The aesthetic of the box, I think, fits the aesthetic of the board and the game in general.
You think so?
Yeah, it is a bit dour. Look, I want to mention one that grabbed me, not just for the cover, which is a bunch of people sitting across a table arguing and yelling at each other, but the little wooden gavel that came inside. Like, that gavel sold me on the game. This is Article 27, the UN Security Council game. I think we played it or twice and then I traded it away because it wasn't very good.
It's a good concept, though. It was a game based entirely on arguing.
Yeah, and one of those ones where without exactly the right crowd, it just fell flat. I played it once with a group that didn't like to argue and negotiate, and it just fell really flat. But it had a gavel!
Last bad cover to mention, and again it was Adam Fowler who nominated this one, and we found our winner, Trump. The game.
Oh, yeah.
Adam, you're hired.
Well, it makes you want to throw up, so I guess that's the... Yeah.
Which brings us to the end of the show. The Dice Man cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, signing off for another week. Leon, I hope you feel better, mate.
I'll attempt to.
I mean, if you were carrying a handbag, you could have, you know, some Panadol or Nurofen or something like that.
I've got my lozenges in my pocket
and
my hoodie. That's true.
Oh, I see. Now I understand. The hoodie is your handbag equivalent.
Yeah, basically.
Hey, Trent, look at the screen. Pathfinder heads to the small screen. No, we're not talking about television. We're talking about now you can play it on your phone as well as your tablet.
But Mark, you already play Pathfinder on your own.
On your phone, not on your own.
Oh, now you can do both.
You can play it on your phone on your own.
Nice.
In the toilet. Shall we say bye?
We'll say bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.